Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Listen, Nerd Right Radio!
Nerd Alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 20 of Nerd Pride Radio. 20, the number of sides on an icosahedron, better known as a die 20, the basis of the latest versions of D&D, the die 20 system, and best of all, Pathfinder. 20 is the number typically required for a critical hit, and that's why McDiddles just gave me, for Christmas, an oversized red die 20 that lights up when you roll a critical hit. It is amazing. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's about seven other kinds of nerd that I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. Our sponsor this week is Acme, makers of Acme Rocket Skates, the patented Coyote Pult, and of course the now famous Water Bottle Bandolier, as seen on your favorite sidekick. Acme, for all your super specialty needs. But first, let's get into some feedback. In the last episode, which was, by the way, 2 weeks ago, I am sorry for taking a break through the holiday week, but man, I was just burned out. But now, we're back and we're ready. And so in the last episode, episode 19, there was a question in the Podomatic from Brasky asking about the results of a showdown between an angry hippopotamus and a chimp carrying a board with nails through it. And, of course, please, no match. Hippo wins. But then the next day, Joel shows up in my office and Joel says, "Oh, I was so disappointed when I heard that. I heard hippopotamus and then chimp with, and I thought chimp with a katana." I'm like, "Oh, wow. You know what? That's pretty good. Chimp with a katana, that's, you know, there's a matchup I'd like to see. That chimp with his strength of 10 men carrying a katana. Maybe, you know, he'd still get his butt pounded by the hippopotamus. But man, that would be a much better fight. Or at least, you know, a well-trained ninja chimp with a katana. All right, now I'm starting to see some possibilities." So anyway, thank you to Joel for improving that very, very lame question. And then, a little more feedback. This one was posted on the forums, and Eliah had posted up and said, "Great podcast." Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for making me laugh out loud in a library. Technically speaking, I think you can put a hint more time in between segments so it doesn't feel like you're talking over yourself, but the sound quality is great. All right, he goes on, but let me address that first. Yeah, dude, I know. I appreciate the comment on the sound quality. I feel really good about this. This cheap-ass microphone is working really well for me. But with the time between segments, here's the deal. You guys have listened to me. You know that I am a deliberate speaker at times. All right? I take my time. I think of my words carefully. And when I record the podcast, I know I have the license to go back and edit out long spaces. So it's quite often that during the podcast, I will pause in the middle of a sentence or at the end of a sentence, and it'll take me a good 10 seconds to think of what I'm going to say next, and then I come back in. Now, that's never been a problem before. I always leave my little gaps in there. I can see them easily when I'm looking through the tape. And so then I just edit out the blank segments and I bring it to an appropriate time. What happened in episode 19 is I took a shortcut. I discovered a function on my software called Truncate Silence, and it just automatically takes those out and brings them down to a reasonable length. And during normal conversation in the podcast, well, conversation, it's just me talking to myself, but during my normal bits, that actually truncates down to a manageable space. But when I have my long bits between segments, especially when there's the music in between, it truncates and it just crams them all together, and it made it sound terrible. So I apologize for episode 19. I mean, again, great topics. I had a lot of fun doing it, but then in the editing, I screwed up. I should not have taken a shortcut. It will not happen again. I will do my best to bring you the highest quality podcast possible. Honest, I will. But then Eliahead continues and says, oh, and about those dice things, you can't have a lucky app, can you? Lucky dice? Yes. Lucky number generators? Really? Okay. And I completely agree, dude. Seriously. Lucky dice. Everyone's got lucky dice. I've got lucky dice and I love them. A lucky app? Seriously? Seriously? Yeah. But this then led into a discussion from Stan and from Jeff talking about how, well, you know, most dice really aren't well balanced and they really aren't totally random or totally fair. And even, you know, high quality casino dice, you know, man, they machine tool those. They have them precision balanced. They weigh them out to make sure that casino dice are as fair as possible. And then Jeff has to point out that yeah, but you know what? Even with all of that, they found out that random number generators, even the cheap little apps or whatever that you find, even those are more random than almost any dice. To which I say, so what? So what? You know what? That's not the point. I don't care how random it is. You know what? I'm glad I have my lucky dice. All right? I'm glad that they've been worn down to the shape that fits my hand perfectly and drops those 20s every time I need them. They are awesome, awesome dice. And the apps, you'll never get the same experience. You'll get a nice random number, but you'll never get that experience. Right? The apps make it too easy. Too easy. You need dice in your hand, and you know it. Argue all you want, you still know I'm right. But, you know, I could chastise Jeff Hawes all day. Enough of that. What we need is updates. I have an update on my cheese nerd project. Yeah, you guys remember my cheese nerd project? I want to be a cheese nerd. Well, I'm getting there. I'm getting there, and I'm so happy about it. I have found that, yeah, going to my local grocery store and my local Walmart and just, I mean, I don't even have to go far. There is a huge variety of cheeses available to me, and they have them all in this little specialty cheese section, and it all looks imported and fancy. And of course, now I realize, you know, to those of you who are real cheese nerds and really know what you're talking about, I understand. I'm just getting the mass-produced stuff that's made to look like it's fancy and imported and whatever, whatever. But it's giving me a basis. It's letting me try some stuff out, and for, you know, not too much money. It's pricey for me because I'm poor, but it's easy to pick up, and there's a wide variety of stuff to choose from for this start. So I get that this is not real fancy cheeses, but it's working for me. And so far, I started off with a smoked Gouda, which I already knew I liked Gouda. So I started off with a smoked Gouda that was really good. And then the next week, I got myself some aged cheddar, 2-year aged cheddar imported from Ireland. I don't remember. And that was pretty good. I tried some Norwegian Jarlsberg, which I only tried the Norwegian Jarlsberg because it caught my eye, because that's one of the ones that stands out in the Monty Python cheese shop sketch. When he goes, some Norwegian Jarlsberg, perhaps. Oh, love that. I love that sketch. I love the whole list of cheeses. And Norwegian Jarlsberg stood out because I always, you know, I assumed that some of those cheeses in there were just made up. And I still assume that that's true because I haven't looked them all up. But I tried the Jarlsberg and a little pungent, a little strong for my taste, but not bad. Right now I've got some French-style goat cheese, is what the label says, and I'm trying that out, spreading it on crackers. That's not bad. And then I even went so far as to find myself a recipe and make my own cheese at home. Oh my god, and how did that turn out, you ask? Oh, horribly. It's just farmer cheese, all right? It's nothing but you boil milk, you dump in some lemon juice. When it curdles, you strain it through a cheesecloth and press it out. Boom, you've got a chunk of cheese. And it really is. It was that easy. I started off with all my ingredients, and honestly, 20 minutes later, I had cheese. It was that simple. Unfortunately, the recipe lied to me and told me how flavorful and wonderful and easy to melt and spreadable, blah, 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 blah. They were all wrong. Right? It was like, imagine if you took milk and you put milk into solid form, and then you ate it, and it tasted exactly like that, except without all that strong, powerful milk flavor. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was paler and blander than milk. It was terrible. I mean, there was just nothing to it. It wasn't bad. It just, there was no flavor at all. So I salted it up a bit, and that brought out a little bit of the cheese flavor, gave it a little edge to it, but still not not much. There was nothing there. So, having talked with my oldest son, Gygax, he said, yeah, but I bet if you made it up with some garlic or some other spices in there, I bet that would work really well. I'm like, yeah, dude, that's what we're going to do next time. So we will try it again. I'll give you a report back. But I'm telling you, I love cheese. I'm so glad I did this. I'm so glad that you guys inspired me to do this. Because if I hadn't brought it to the podcast, I mean, I'm just bringing up topics I'm talking about. And once I committed to it on the air, well, now I got to do it, right? So I'm so glad I did. Thank you. And holy cow, we are never getting the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. And you know why? Because we have to get to Mike Was Wrong. That's right. Yet another installment of our all-too-frequent segment, Mike Was Wrong. But this time, it's one of those where I'm happy to be wrong. Turns out, gorillas. Remember episode 13? You maybe don't remember. Someone in the Podomatic asked me if I knew the species and genus names for anything, and so I rambled on at great length and probably bored you all to tears, listing off all of my genus and species knowledge, all of my taxonomic knowledge that I have gained over the years. And the important part of that bit, the only really relevant part of that bit, was I lamented over the loss of the term gorilla, 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 because I was always so thrilled that the scientific name for gorillas is gorilla, gorilla. And then when you looked at the subspecies of them, there was gorilla, gorilla, Beringi, and gorilla, gorilla, something else. And then the common gorilla was known as gorilla, gorilla, gorilla. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever. I loved sharing that little tidbit of knowledge. That was my favorite bit of trivia. And then as it turned out, I reported in episode 13 that as they've changed it now, instead of one species, there's two species, and now we no longer have a gorilla, gorilla, gorilla designation. I was wrong. I was right that there are now two species of gorillas. Did you know that? That there's two separate species of gorillas? I mean, I knew that there were two separate species of chimps, but gorillas? That's new to me. All right, so apparently there's the eastern gorilla and there's the western gorilla. And the eastern gorillas are Gorilla Beringi is their scientific name. And then they have two subspecies. But then the western gorilla is Gorilla Gorilla. And it also has two subspecies, and one of those, the common western gorilla, is Gorilla Gorilla Gorilla. Oh, thank goodness. Now we can lay this one to rest. This is perfect. And finally, that brings us to the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. Oh, this is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting, I add it to my master list, and the best stuff gets spewed out all over you every week when I record. You lucky dogs! Right into the master list. First up is a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos!
Not even close, Gonzo. This topic is voice actors. And I don't mean Morgan Freeman narrating all your favorite documentaries, no. I'm talking about cartoon voice actors. I don't know if you know this about me, but I love cartoon voice actors. I love recognizing a voice, especially when they're doing something that's, you know, not in their usual range, but you still know who it is anyway because you just know their style. I love doing that. When I was a kid, I was fascinated with Mel Blanc. The idea that when I first found out that one dude did pretty much every voice in Looney Tunes, honestly, I mean, the guy that does Tweety is the same guy that does Daffy and Sylvester and Yosemite Sam and the whole shebang, one dude, really? Pepe Le Pew, it's all that guy? I thought Mel Blanc was a freaking genius. I still think that, even though he's dead. I'm just so impressed by that kind of talent because I would love to have that kind of vocal range, that kind of vocal talent. Sadly, I don't. As I've gotten older, I've realized that I can't do voice work the way some other people do. I can't do, I don't do accents nearly as well as I thought I did, as proven by my attempt at Sean Connery a while back, which I erased so that you guys will never ever hear it. That's how bad it was. Yeah, and I'm a guy that's willing to sing on this podcast and display it publicly for the world, and yet even I was ashamed of my Sean Connery impression. So, it's just something that I've always been really impressed by. So over the course of time, I've been paying attention to my favorite voice actors. I'm always looking for new people who are coming in and seeing people who are expanding their repertoire and this kind of stuff. And I kind of have had this topic on my master list for a while, and every now and then I'll see something new, and I'm like, oh, yeah, let me write in a little note about that. So for the first time in the history of this show, I am going to give you a topic I've actually prepared for and done real research for because, like I say, I just jot down stuff every once in a long while when something interesting crosses my desk, and now suddenly I realize I've got like paragraphs worth of information about voice actors. I'll try and condense it down to just the interesting stuff, though. All right. First off, my absolute favorite voice actors currently working today. Number one, Billy West. And number two, Tara Strong. I think these two are the most impressive people working in the business right now. First off, Billy West. You guys know Billy West because he's the voice of almost all of Futurama, right? Yeah, he is awesome. Billy West does, on Futurama, he's Fry, he's Professor Farnsworth, he's Zoidberg, he's Zap Brannigan, he does this whole string of Futurama voices, and he's really good. And not only that, Billy West was also Ren and Stimpy. He's the red M&M. I just found that one out like a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and that's what prompted me to even put this on here and finally go, you know what, I need to talk about this. Because I found that Billy West is the red M&M. And then once I'm listening, I'm like, oh my God, it is. It just impresses me. And not only all of that, but Billy West has taken over voices for a bunch of dead voice actors. He's the current, and again, they shift around, so there's other people that do these off and on, but currently he's done the voice of Elmer Fudd, Bugs Bunny, Porky Pig, Tweety, most of the Looney Tunes stuff that Mel Blanc used to do. He was half of the reprised Woody Woodpecker show a year or two ago, doing Woody and a couple others. He was the voice of Popeye when they started bringing back some Popeye stuff a couple years ago. It's just amazing the range this guy has. And I heard him in an interview on The Nerdist, of all things. And it was a really good interview, really fascinating. Because they would talk to him, and as he's mentioning the different voices he does and the different work he's done, he just breaks into a voice in the middle of what he's talking about and then goes right on to something else, or he'll have a little conversation between two of his voices. And he's just fascinating. The problem I have with him is it turns out that I didn't like him as a person. I love him as a voice actor. I think he's great. But in this interview, at least, he just came across as so, I don't even know what the right word for it is. But it was as if he was speaking down to the audience, or speaking down to the hosts even, as if everything he said carried this weight of wisdom and he was just waiting for you to recognize what a wise man he was, waiting for you to bow down to his experience and go, oh, you're right, Billy, I never thought of it like that. And he acts like he's imparting this great knowledge upon us, and yet, you know, there's a couple times when he was saying stuff that was just patently stupid. And yet, you know, he's still Billy West. I would, you know, if I were in the room with him, no matter what he was saying, no matter how stupid I thought he was being, I would have agreed with all of it. But you bet, Mr. West, that sounds awesome, because he's Billy West, for goodness sake. I would be starstruck in his presence. And turns out, you know, the dude's like 60. I mean, he's an old guy. But man, just great, great voice work. But the other one, my female voice actor that I like, Tara Strong. I don't know if you know Tara Strong. Bubbles from the Powerpuff Girls. Yeah, see, that's cool. But also, Timmy Turner. Did you know Bubbles and Timmy Turner were the same person? That's right. Batgirl, the voice of Batgirl, Barbara Gordon from the Batman cartoons. That's her. And then this is where she gets really cool. On Drawn Together, she did the voice of Princess Clara and Toot Bronstein. So she was both of them. And just phenomenal. I love Drawn Together. As crass and crude and stupid as that show was, really entertaining through most of its run. She does Raven from the Teen Titans. And this one is just for Zimney Pot. Tara Strong does the voice of Twilight Sparkle in My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. Yeah, that's just for you. Oh, and also just for Brasky, when they had the X-Men cartoon, she did the voice of Ilyana Rasputin. Magic, yeah. That's for you. Plus, on top of all of this, she's really cute and she's Canadian. How cool is that? Now, I'm not going to run on too long. I've got a list of other people here, and I'm not going to go on too much because I've given you my two favorites. But, all right, one, speaking of Futurama, I love Katie Sagal. I love Katie Sagal as Taranga Leela. I think she is the perfect voice for Leela, but I don't consider Katie Sagal a great voice actress. She's just a great actress. I mean, even if you first learned of her on Married with Children like I did, which seemed like such a throwaway role, she's versatile and powerful and strong. She's a great actress. Watch her in Sons of Anarchy right now. I've been watching that on Roku lately. She is really good in that. But again, when she does voice work, like Leela, she's not doing a voice. She's doing herself. She's just acting. She's just, I mean, that's her own voice, her own style. And so as much as I love her there, I don't put her in the category of great voice actors. She's just a great actress. But also, oh my God, did you know, on Futurama, the voice of Scruffy the janitor, who is one of my favorite characters on that show, Scruffy and Zap Brannigan. Scruffy the janitor is played by David Herman. David Herman, who used to be on Mad TV, and then who then played Michael Bolton in Office Space. Yeah, picture that one. Okay, you got it in your head? Michael Bolton from Office Space is the voice of Scruffy the janitor. That's just cooler than crap. And then also, of course, from Futurama, John DiMaggio as Bender. I don't see DiMaggio as having quite the range of some of the other people I like. I mean, but he does a lot, and he does really well, because he does Bender and he does Barbados Slim. Who doesn't love Barbados Slim, right? But of course, also, using almost the same voice as Bender, he's doing Jake the Dog on Adventure Time. And if you're on Adventure Time, you're the coolest guy in the world. So I give him all props for that. I'm just gonna run down my list and just give you the interesting ones. All right, Jess Harnell. Did you know Jess Harnell, who was the voice of Wacko Warner on the Animaniacs? He did Wacko Warner. He did Captain Hero from Drawn Together, Ironhide from the Transformers movies, and he's in a band, and he sings. It's like a heavy metal '80s band that remakes pop tunes. It's called Rock Sugar, and they're kind of a gimmick band, but they are, honest to God, heavy metal band, and they take one hard rock 80s song, heavy metal 80s song, and then they take a sweet bubblegum little girly pop song from the 80s, and then they combine the two and they make a mashup of it, and they are just really funny. In fact, note to self, I will go back, I will find a clip, and I will insert it right here. I don't know which of the clips I just inserted, but man, wasn't that cool? See? So that's Jess Harnell, Wacko Warner. Go figure. Who else? Okay, Elizabeth Daly. I always have to mention Elizabeth Daly just because, and I've talked about her before. I don't care. You'll listen again because not only is she the voice of Tommy Pickles on the Rugrats, but she was also the voice of Buttercup from Powerpuff Girls, and just for Rossist Pegacorn, in the 2007 pilot for an animated series called What's Wrong with Ruth, she provided the voice of Pegacorn. So there you go. Don't say I never did anything for you. And then, she was the voice of Babe the Pig from Babe Pig in the City. And last of all, she was Dottie in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which is not a voice, that's just her. And as I've mentioned before, she showed her boobs in the movie Valley Girl, which also co-starred Nick Cage. And Nick Cage is the world's biggest nerd because he named his kid after Superman. There we go. Are there any other good ones? Tom Kenny from SpongeBob, the voice of SpongeBob. He's also the narrator and the mayor for Powerpuff Girls. Lumpus and Slinkman on Camp Lazlo. Jake on My Gym Partner's a Monkey. Eduardo on Foster's. Mr. Lopart on Handy Manny. Tom Kenny is actually really, really good. He just the problem I have with Tom Kenny is that, yeah, other than SpongeBob, and even SpongeBob's getting a little old, his voice work is awesome. I mean, he plays these roles really well. He's really good at what he does. None of those shows are any of my favorites. I mean, I know them all. I've seen them all. And he does really, really good stuff. But those aren't particularly my favorite shows, which is not his fault. That's the writing. But I bring up Tom Kenny to then link to Clancy Brown, the Kurgan. The Kurgan from Highlander plays the voice of Mr. Krabs. I just think that's too cool. Who else is left? No, that's about it. I mean, there's Tress MacNeille. She does lots of stuff. There's Grey Delisle. I think she's awesome. And one of the weirdest things is I found out that almost every female voice actress that I linked to that I, you know, had done a lot of roles and that had done a lot of stuff that I like, almost all of them have at some point or another played the voice of Harley Quinn. Don't know why. But enough about that. Because it's time to visit my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, I'm here to share it with you. And then, okay, once again, I'm sorry, I've got to stop. I don't know if you know this. Whenever I do these intros, these little bits that I do, you know, every time I do the gaming table, I say the exact same thing. Every time I do the Pod-O-Matic, I say the exact same thing. And I've worked up a series of hand gestures. I wish you guys could see them. Well, no, I don't really, because then I'd have to have a video camera here. But I go nuts with these, and I do the exact same gestures every time, and you guys can't see them. So I feel like it's completely wasted effort. Except I know, no, it's not, because you guys can feel the love. You know that love and vibe is there, right? Right? You can feel the energy. All right, anyway, back to my gaming table. I have decided that, and this is a quick one, I've decided that from now on, I'm going to do my best to always refer to Pathfinder as Pathfinder. All right. I understand the game Pathfinder came from Dungeons & Dragons 3.5, which then ended when they started Dungeons & Dragons 4, and so Paizo takes over and creates Pathfinder, which picks up the legacy there. And so it is easy to think of Pathfinder as just Dungeons & Dragons, and I'm not the only person that does that. I've seen in the Penny Arcade comic strip online, they talk about playing Dungeons & Dragons, and yet when they're playing... in one of their recent strips, they had, even though they say they're playing Dungeons & Dragons, he's got a Game Master screen and books for Pathfinder set up on the table. So they're clearly playing Pathfinder, but they keep referring to it as D&D. And part of the reason for that, same reason I do it, is because it's more recognizable. If I tell somebody I'm playing D&D, if I tell someone I'm playing Dungeons & Dragons, they understand immediately what game I'm talking about. If I tell them, hey, yeah, me and my kids were playing Pathfinder this weekend, no recognition from anyone who's not immediately inside the nerd circle of gaming, right? So that's why I've been using it as a convenience, as a shortcut, because then I don't have to explain what Pathfinder is. But I realized that by doing so, I am doing a grave disservice to the people at Paizo and to the Pathfinder game, which I love. I love Paizo. I love Pathfinder. I support it with my dollars. It is a great game. I'm so thankful that they are there to provide support for that version of the role-playing game that I love so much. And Dungeons & Dragons itself has moved on. They've moved on to version 4, a game which, from what I know of it, I'm not thrilled about it. I haven't bought any of it. I'm not planning on playing it. So therefore, Dungeons & Dragons is no longer that game. Dungeons & Dragons is no longer D&D 3.5 that I love so much. Dungeons & Dragons is something else now. And so to be fair to everyone involved, I need to stop calling my game Dungeons & Dragons because it's not. So from now on, I am going to work really hard on the podcast and in all aspects of life. But on the podcast, I'm going to work to say Pathfinder every time I talk about the game. If I miss it, you call me out. And if you guys are new and, you know, if I lose some of the newbies because they don't understand what I mean by Pathfinder, well, I guess that's just too bad. You'll have to do some research, people. And the reason this comes up is because I just started a brand new game of Pathfinder this last weekend for my youngest kids. I've decided that Logue is 8. I got him some dice when I went to Gen Con so that he could have his own dice, and I told him we'd get him into role-playing soon, and well, it's taken a few months, but here we are. And so we started the game for him as an 8-year-old, and oh my God, he is awesome at it. God, he got right into Pathfinder without any problem. I gave him a simplified character sheet, all the stats were right there in front of him, easy to find, and he loved it. He caught on with no problem. He's an awesome role player. He was great at problem solving and working out puzzles and actually interacting with the NPCs. He did really well. My second son, Atayan, was there as well. He's the 13-year-old, and he pitched in because, you know, he loves playing, and okay, so he's playing with little kids. That's fine with him. And he was great support as kind of a guide to the others. And then, and I told myself I wouldn't do this, but the 5-year-old wanted in, and so we let him in. I made him a character, we got him some dice, we got him set up, and it's a little unfair to Logue, because Logue has had to wait till he was 8, and now, what, here, Tada just gets to jump in just because, well, someone else is doing it? And valuable lesson learned. The 5-year-old can't play Pathfinder. He's just not that good. And it's not that the concepts are beyond him or anything. It's just he can't pay attention that long. We get to talking, and you know what? He really just wants to hit things with a sword. Or worse than that is he doesn't understand that in this version of Let's Pretend, he has to follow the rules that we set down. And so whereas the 8-year-old gets it with no problem. I mean, you know, here's the scene. You have to work within that. The 5-year-old keeps wanting to say that, okay, well, now I'm going to pull out a sword gun. Well, you don't have a sword gun. You have an axe and you have a bow. Those are your choices, man. And, yeah, he just doesn't get it. So fortunately for us, I didn't have to kick him out. We were going to kick him out, but then we chose not to. As it turns out, he just got bored and decided to leave. He finally said, you know what? I'm going to go play over here. Is that okay? And we said, yeah, that's fine. And so we played his character for him. And once or twice, he'd come back and he'd watch a little bit, maybe pitch in just a little bit. And he'd go, yeah, no, never mind. And then he'd leave. And now next game that we play, yeah, he probably won't bother to come around at all. So we played a couple of sessions of Pathfinder this weekend. It was awesome. I love gaming with kids. I love gaming with people of all ages, but I love gaming with my kids. I highly recommend that you try it. Come game with my kids. No. So if you have kids and you haven't introduced them to your favorite hobby yet, man, do it. Do it. They'll get it. It's good for them. And now it's time for another Nerd Culture Report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
How do you get that wrong every time? No. This one is O'Chul! O'Chul, my favorite comic character. O'Chul is great. If you don't read Order of the Stick, then you need to go read Order of the Stick right this moment. Go to Google, type in Order of the Stick, follow the link to, it's giantitp.com, I think. But doesn't matter. Find Order of the Stick and read it. It's up to, you know, they've got 800 strips so far. He's been doing this for years. It is a online comic based on Dungeons & Dragons 3.5, and it is made up entirely of stick figures. And so these are stick figures of characters in a game of D&D 3.5, and the thing is really engaging and really deep. The plot lines are incredibly intricate. It's an epic save-the-world sort of plot, the kind of Lord of the Rings thing you'd expect from, you know, a fantasy game epic like this. And they're playing it huge. And it's funny, and it's dramatic, and the characters are all extremely well-developed, and I've had many points in this thing where I've had strips that have given me the chills, strips that you're like, oh, yes, that's it! I mean, you're rooting for these guys, and the only drawback to this strip is, like a lot of online comics, the updates are sporadic. All right? He generally gives you about one comic a week, is what I'm guessing the average would be. Sometimes there's two or three. Sometimes it's 2-3 weeks in between. Apparently he has some chronic illness that gives him bouts at times. And so, you know, he'll go through a 2-week stretch where he can't work. And I have no idea what it is. No one talks about it. For all I know, it could be, you know, chronic rheumatoid arthritis or something like that. I have no idea what. But Rich Berlew is a genius. He is a great artist who chooses to work in stick figures. He's a great writer. This whole thing is really, really good. And the best character in that entire strip, I will just tell you right now, is O'Chul. I don't know why I'm forced to say his name that way every time I say it, but I do. O'Chul is great. He is a paladin, a grizzled old paladin in the Azure Nation. It's their Asian analog nation. For this strip. And O'Chul as a paladin is just the embodiment of everything that is good. He is not necessarily a joyful man, and normally I go for joyful, but he is just good no matter what. He is good, and he does. And the reason I'm bringing it up this week is I just for Christmas got a t-shirt that on the front has a picture of O'Chul, and it says good, a renewable resource. And then there's a little joke that goes under it. And I love my O'Chul shirt. It is my new favorite t-shirt. I wear that thing all the time. And O'Chul is just a spectacular character. He is just, and in addition to being good at all times, the man, I mean, he's good, noble, loyal. He is everything lawful good about this game. And he is also tough as frickin' nails. And that's the part that he maybe doesn't deal out the damage as hard as others, although he deals out the damage pretty hard. But he can take anything the evil of the world can dish up, and he'll spit in your face right after. He is that kind of guy. There's nothing that brings him down. He survives through everything. Survivor, that's another good word. Takes everything. There is a whole sequence of strips where the big bad guy has daily sessions where, okay, they throw O'Toole into some new horrible situation and see how long it takes him to die. And he doesn't actually die. They bring him down to, you know, zero hit points, and then they revive him again so that they can do it again the next day. And the abuse that he puts up with is just phenomenal. And it's just a fascinating character, fascinating storyline. So, read Order of the Stick, worship O'Toole. There you go. Man, how am I running so long on time? Well, you know what? I don't care, because it's time for the science fiction double feature.
Science fiction double feature.
That's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two movie reviews for the same low, low price. And the movies this week, well, the first one is Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Yeah, you remember me talking about this a while back, and I said, wow, that looks really good. And it turns out it is really good. All right, it came up on disc. We got it from Netflix, and we watched it and loved it. And then I swear to God, we returned the disc, and 2 days after we mailed the disc back in, they put it on Instant Watch. We didn't even have to rent it if we didn't want to. We just had it right there on Instant Watch. But it doesn't matter, because once it came out on Instant Watch, we watched it again so that we could see it with our oldest son. And Tucker and Dale vs. Evil is everything I thought it would be and more. I said it's had such promise in the premise of it, and it turns out, man, they delivered. The writing on it was smart. For being, all right, the basic premise is two hillbillies are heading up to their mountain cabin to do a weekend of fishing and renovating, and on their way up, they have a run-in with some college kids, and the college kids assume that they are psycho killer hillbillies, and thus, when they get there, there are grievous misunderstandings and hilarity ensues. That's pretty much the whole movie, but it is smartly written, and these guys are funny. Alan Tudyk plays Tucker, and Tyler Labine plays Dale, and the two of them are just gold in this movie. I mean, honest, they are spectacular to a T. I love Alan Tudyk in anything. I've already told you that. I will watch anything that has Alan Tudyk in it, because the man is an acting genius. And Tyler Labine, I am now gaining some appreciation for. He was in that short-lived TV show, whatever it was, Reaper. Is that the one? And he was good in that, and I liked him in that. And now in this, brilliant. I mean, he is plays it perfectly. And then I went and saw him in A Good Old-Fashioned Orgy. I saw that one recently, too. And then there's Tyler Labine in that one. And it's like, oh, yeah, no. He's just Jack Black light, isn't he? Yeah, that wasn't so good. So Tyler Labine has a lot of talent. I just, because he is very much a Jack Black kind of type in voice, body type, personality at times, I'm afraid of seeing him cast too much in that Jack Black role, because, well, we already have a Jack Black. You don't need Tyler Labine to be that. He can be so much more than that. So hopefully, as he becomes more popular, hopefully he gets to choose these roles, and hopefully we get to see more of the Tyler Labine that I really like. And this movie was awesome. So yeah, the movie was over the top, it was stupid, and yet it was so perfectly done. It was exactly what I was hoping for from this kind of movie. I highly recommend it. Second movie, though, 13 Assassins. 13 Assassins feels like an old samurai movie, an old ninja movie, except that it's not. It was made last year, and it is a Japanese film from director Takashi Miike. And I don't know if you know Takashi Miike, but I do. I was surprised that I do. I didn't realize any of this when I'm watching the movie. First off, 13 Assassins is about an evil Japanese lord. This is in 1840, 1845, something like that. The end of the Japanese feudal period. An evil Japanese lord who needs to be removed, but he can't because his brother is whoever the guy is in charge. And so we have this secret arrangement for these samurai to band together and take the dude out. They have to ambush him and they have to take him out. This is the whole plot, is that dude is evil. We can't remove him straight up for political reasons. Therefore, we need some hired guns, these 13 samurai, well, 12 samurai and a dude. And we need them to do our dirty work for us and take him out. And even though they're samurai, they are willing to do it for the good of the nation, for the honor of their country. They will do this. And it was awesome. I can't even begin to explain to you how good 13 Assassins was. It is a Japanese subtitled movie. I had to read the entire thing, and oh my God, can they talk? They went on and on and on, and yet I was fascinated. I was spellbound. My wife and I watched it together, and we were both just hypnotized by it. Even when they were doing the political parts, it was paced perfectly so that, I mean, we didn't mind the reading. We were perfectly happy because the story was just so engrossing. And then it's a 2-hour-long movie. At an hour 15, the climax begins. We've got 45 minutes of climax. There was a lot of swordplay and a lot of arrows and a lot of fire and a lot of killing and a lot of, oh my God. And yet the entire 45 minutes, and again, it was paced well and it was broken up with some other little stuff in between. It was such that even my wife, who can't stand it when we watched The Matrix, first time my wife saw The Matrix, and it gets to the scene in the hotel lobby, you know the scene I'm talking about, where Neo and Trinity have to make it just from the door to the lobby or to the elevator, and there is nothing but gun after gun after gun, and it must be 12 solid minutes of bullets. And I love that scene. I love watching plaster flying, stone getting shot up, people dying, doing these slow motion flips, the whole business. It is a spectacular scene. It's a total guy scene. All right, we got halfway through that scene, and my wife said, yeah, okay, I get it. They shoot a lot of guns. Let's move on now. And I'm like, oh, would you stop? You're ruining this. This is art. What is wrong with you? Okay, so even my wife, who has that attitude about long action scenes, had no complaints. I mean, again, she was right there with me, cheering, rooting them on. It was great. 13 Assassins is just a well-put-together film. It was just solid. All right, now, I said that I know the director, Takashi Miike, because I've seen his other stuff before. I didn't realize this until I looked it up afterwards. Takashi Miike did the movie Audition. Have you seen Audition? This is one of the creepiest, scariest horror films I have ever seen in my life, and I don't say that lightly. For an American audience, have you seen the movie Hostel? All right, you remember how torturous Hostel was because it had that sense of induced helplessness? You remember in Hostel when the guy's strapped to a chair and they're just drilling into parts of him and there is nothing he can do about it. And oh yeah, spoiler, he dies because he was completely and totally helpless. And so you get to watch all these horrible, horrible things happen to people who have no options and can't fight back. Hostel was mild in comparison to Audition. I kid you not. Audition was one of the single most disturbing films I've ever seen. And so to go from Audition to this, and you know what? And once you knew it was him, you're like, oh yeah, I can see a couple of the elements. I get it. Except he doesn't, you know, yeah, there's one scene with a gal who, she's a quadruple amputee. This is a sign of the torturous nature of the evil lord. And so you get this shot of her, and it's kind of graphic. But it's not like he lingers lovingly on it like he would have done in Audition. It's just, you know, you get it, you get the point, and then we move on. It's something horrifying and grotesque, but okay, now we've made our point, we go. And he did it really, really well. Takashi Miike also did an episode of Masters of Horror, which I saw and was incredibly disturbed by. It was very much in the vein of Audition. If you've never watched Masters of Horror, also really good. It was an old TV series. I think it was on Showtime. Don't remember. And every episode, every one-hour episode, it's like watching a Twilight Zone or a Tales from the Crypt or whatever, except it's an hour long, and each episode is done by some famous horror director. And so they had, you know, Italian horror directors and Japanese and Korean and American. And just every week it's a different guy. And you get to watch their bit. And a lot of them are cheesy and stupid and horrible, and a lot of them are surprisingly brilliant. So, you know, it's worth checking out for some of those. And then also Takashi Miike did, and this one I was just shocked because I didn't even remember that he did this one. He did Sukiyaki Western Django, which, not a spectacular film, but Sukiyaki Western Django is notable for a couple of reasons. One, it featured Quentin Tarantino as an actor. He wasn't directing. He didn't help write it. He just showed up as an actor in Sukiyaki Western Django, which, by the way, I keep saying it just because I love saying Sukiyaki Western Django. You cannot say that phrase enough. Try it. Sukiyaki Western Django. It's awesome. But the movie was mostly a remake of Yojimbo, which is, for those of you who don't know Yojimbo, did you ever see Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis? Yeah, okay. It's that same movie. Did you ever see Lucky Number 11, which is a more recent one? Yeah, okay. See, same movie. It's the plot of Drifter comes into town. There are two rival gangs that dominate the city, and he plays off both of them to pit them against each other until ultimately he is the last man standing, and he brings down both of them, and he makes out like a bandit in the end. And so Sukiyaki Western Django was another version of that, and not a great one. I remember it being a little confusing, but all versions of Yojimbo are a little confusing for me. I don't know. I've seen them all, except the original, and they all lose me at parts. But it also, it dragged out, and it had some long, slow parts and some things that just didn't work. But the action scenes in it were brilliant. That was the other notable part. It was really, really good action, and you can see where he has refined that style. And so you come forward to 2010, and you see 13 Assassins, and Miyake just tears it up. Really, really good movie. So, after all of that long expository verbiage, the whole point is, hey, I love 13 Assassins. You should watch it. It's on instant watch right now. Go get it. But now, I'd like to bring the tone of the room down a little bit if I could. Can I get a little mood lighting, please? All right. There we go. It's time for a little music. And I want to go with something mellow, something soft. So I've decided Skindred. Yeah, that works, right? Ah, I love Skindred. Skindred is great. They are basically, to me, and I don't know how they classify themselves, but Skindred is heavy metal reggae is what it sounds like, or heavy metal reggae, ska, I don't know all the terms. But they're a great band. I love them. You probably recognize one or two of their songs. And I was fascinated to find out just recently that Skindred is Welsh. I mean, honestly, you listen to their sound, you'll hear it in just 2 seconds when I play the song. It sounds like, you know, the lead singer's Jamaican. It sounds like a reggae band that, you know, got some metal backing to them. And as it turns out, no, they're Welsh. They're like literally from Wales. I mean, the lead singer is a black guy with long dreadlocks, and he looks the part of a Rasta Jamaican reggae singer. And yet, no, he's Welsh, and his, you know, that's where they're from their whole lives. And then I found out that before he was in Skindred, same dude was the front man for a band called Wardub. And I had never heard of Wardub before, but I went to iTunes and I got some samples of stuff. And as it turns out, Wardub sounds exactly like Skindred. I was so excited. I mean, really good stuff. So I've gotten a bunch of their songs, and I'm not going to play any Wardub today because I haven't listened to them long enough. I want to give them some exposure, give them a chance to really get into my head before I share something like that. But I can share Skindred because I love Skindred. So this is just for my son, Italian, who also loves the band Skindred. Let's listen to Nobody.
My song, we come to take over. MC, you better look over your shoulder. Yeah, you know, we adding on. Oh, and no. Enough of them, I come and them, I try to agree out. Burn down, pill, we are the rough, let's go. Music we make for make the crowd jump up. Crowd get all times blood and the rapper. Blend up the rag or metal punk hip hop. Unity sound, killer groove non-stop. In every displace, I saw this song will survive. Strength and power, I go keep them alone. My song, we come to take over. MC, you better look over your shoulder. Yeah, you know, we are known. Oh, we know. Skindred, we in our area. Bring the rockers, you know we're superior. Yeah, you know, we are known. Oh, but nigga, song, time they shop it online. Nobody gets out alive. But nigga, song, time they shop it online. Nobody gets out alive. But it gets out of this, a brutal lie. I'm gonna be one and one, six and seven and perpetuity. And nobody gets out of this, a brutal lie. Nobody gets out.
See what I mean? Great stuff. That was Skindred. That was Nobody. That was awesome. All right. Now it's time for the badass movie quote of the week. This week's movie, this week's quote, is the entire movie Fight Club. The entire movie is eminently quotable from beginning to end. The entire thing was written as a dude's movie designed to be quotable. I honestly think that was the entire intent of it. The dialogue in it is spectacular. The quotes are unforgettable. Straight up from, rule number one. But I'm not going to do that one because everyone knows that one. This is probably the second most famous set of quotes from Fight Club, but it's probably my favorite. I felt like putting a bullet between the eyes of every panda that wouldn't screw to save its species. I wanted to open the dump valves on oil tankers and smother all the French beaches I'd never see. I wanted to breathe smoke. That is the essence of Fight Club. A few months ago, rewatched Fight Club with my oldest, who is finally old enough to see movies like Fight Club, and we had a blast. Oh, I forgot, because I haven't seen Fight Club since it originally came out. I mean, we rented it. I loved it. I thought it was a great movie, and like within the year, I got it as a gift. I actually own Fight Club, and yet I had never gone back to rewatch the whole movie. I'd seen bits and pieces of it, but I'd never watched the whole thing beginning to end. So when I sat down with Gygax and we saw the entire film, I was like, yeah, that's why I love that film. That was, I swear, 1999, one of the greatest years in film for me. That was the year of Matrix. That was the year of Fight Club. Run, Lola, Run. American Beauty. Blair Witch, if you're into that, I didn't care as much for it. Or Sixth Sense, also, didn't care as much for that. But man, those were huge movies, right? So, 1999, awesome, awesome year for film, and that was Fight Club. But, you know what it's time for? One more song. Let's listen to Pressure.
Buzzing up with a musical attack. Rip it up with a boom sound we no lack. Got the rhythms of death, play killer tracks. Annihilate and destroy them, we do that. Letting them know that our week will be rocking control again. I'm unwell, setting the pace in the flesh. While them up, driving them insane. Oh, that's right, sun, you see, steam down. Get out of the way, time, tycoon. Burn it to the ground. Watch out, watch out, I'm breaking. Says you just drop them under pressure. Can I take the music in the sound? You will turn it up and never down. Says you just drop them under pressure. Can I take the music in the sound? You will turn it up and never down.
There ain't nothing wrong with Skindred. Before we hit the hour mark, let's jump right into the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble. He rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Well, then send your question or your topic to me by email, or better yet, send it to me in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And this week, you want it to be about number 9, which is from Sirius Paul. Paul says, do you read movie reviews? Well, you know what, Paul? I do, in fact, read movie reviews. I read lots of movie reviews. I love them. But here's the trick. I generally only read movie reviews after I've already seen the movie. It's just my thing, to which you wonder, well, what's the point of reading a movie review if you've already seen it? You already know what you think of it. Why would you do that? I love Rotten Tomatoes. I go there all the time. RottenTomatoes.com, does movie reviews, and they always have a compilation of, 50, 80, 100 movie reviews all compiled onto one page. And then they'll give you a summary of, the tomato meter. And tell you, 70% positive rating, 80% positive rating, 12%, whatever it is. So I go there all the time. Before I watch a movie, I will generally go to Rotten Tomatoes, check out the tomato meter and see how the film is rated. And that may affect whether I'm going to go or not. And sometimes if it's a movie that I'm really excited about, but it's got a really low rating, I will sometimes just look at the headlines of the reviews to see what the consensus is. I won't actually read the reviews, but I'll just look at the headlines and see, oh, okay. Well, if they're giving it low ratings because of this, well, that's something that I don't care about. Because there's lots of movies that are low rated that I don't care. Good, cheesy, popcorn, action, fun. I will still go watch it. I don't actually read whole reviews because I don't want to give anything away. I've gotten to where I don't like watching trailers for movies. I don't like reading reviews. I don't like knowing anything about movies ahead of time. I love the experience of getting to go see a movie that I literally have heard nothing about. That's why 13 Assassins was wonderful. I loved it. It came up on our instant watch list. I don't know if I've explained it to you before, have I? When we do Instant Roku, I have a computer program that I punch in that, okay, here's the range of our movies. On our instant queue, the movies run from number 100 to number 385 or whatever it is. And I go, bang, and I hit it, and then Excel pumps me out a random number and says, bing, 215, that's the movie you're watching. And my wife and I will then go and watch whatever that movie is. Doesn't matter what it turns up to be, we watch it. And our rule is 20 minutes. All right, if after 20 minutes, both of us have decided that, yeah, you know what, we're done with this, then we'll shut it off and we'll roll something else. But after 20 minutes, if we're still interested, okay, we watch it through to the end. And that's how we got 13 Assassins. And so we didn't even read the description for it. All we saw was it said 13 Assassins, and it looked vaguely Japanese-y from the box cover. And we're like, okay, let's watch it. Whatever it is, let's watch it. And I'm so excited that we did. It's great. I love going into a movie where I know nothing about it. But then, after I get done watching the film, I actually like going back and seeing other people's opinions of it. I like comparing notes, seeing which critics agree with me, which ones don't, who I can consider reliable, so that even if I don't read the reviews, if I can just see that they gave it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, maybe that weighs a little bit on me. But I'm just interested in the opinions. And so there's a lot of times, especially for a movie that really affects me, something that I really enjoy or really struck me in a certain way, I will go in and I'll read probably, you know, 5 or 6 different reviews. I'll pick out the ones that look most interesting. I'll read several of them just to get a feel for how other people reacted to the same movie I did. How was their reaction different from mine? I just find that fascinating. Number 94. This one is from The Phantom. The Phantom says, McDonald's or Burger King? McDonald's. When I eat fast food, I don't eat much fast food anymore because I've been working on eating healthier for the last 6-8 months. But when we do go, I would much prefer McDonald's over Burger King. It used to be the opposite. When I was a kid, I loved Burger King. When I was in college, Burger King, it would have been my number one choice every single time. I loved it. I don't know what changed or what's different now, but Burger King is just a little too, I don't know if it's greasier. I don't know it's all greasy, unhealthy, terrible food, but something about Burger King just doesn't sit as well with me anymore. I much prefer to go to McDonald's. And if I go to McDonald's, I usually get, you know, a McChicken and a small fry. I pay $2 and I get a small meal, and not healthy, but, you know, at least not a huge meal. If I go to Burger King, tell you what though, as much as I may prefer McDonald's, I will tell you, Burger King has my single favorite meal. I will go there, and I would love, if I could, to get myself the A1 Steakhouse Burger, a big old thick steak burger with A1 sauce all over it with crumbled fried onions on top, and then an order of onion rings to go with it. And the thing is probably like 1,900 calories for the entire meal. I don't care. That thing is so good. My mouth is watering. I'm starting to drool and spit now. Because that sounds awesome. That's the one meal. And every time I eat it, and I'll do that maybe once a year, I will have that exact meal. And every time I do, it makes me sick. I mean, I love eating it. But by the time I'm done, oh, God, I just want to throw up. It's so fatty and so rich. But that's my favorite meal. But I would much prefer to eat at McDonald's if I had to go eat fast food. R2 says to check out 45. Which is from Brasky. And Brasky says, why did you own the first 12 issues of the Power Pack in the 80s? Was that some kind of awesome, angsty, coming-of-age supers comic? Explain yourself! Oof, okay, I owned the first 12 issues of Power Pack If you're not aware, I'll tell you what Power Pack was. It was a comic, a superheroes comic by Marvel Comics about four kids, siblings, two brothers, two sisters, and I think the oldest one was maybe 10, 11, I don't remember. So they were little kids, elementary age kids, and they had the stupidest superpowers. I don't even remember what they were. I just remember they looked like a rainbow. And they had stupid superpowers and were fighting aliens who had abducted their parents. I don't remember the details. All I know is it was really dumb. And it was clearly a comic book designed to bring little kids into comics. Right? Rather than nowadays, they do the wise thing of, we have our regular comics, and then we have a whole run of comics that are aimed at teenagers or tweeners, and then we have a run of comics like The Superhero Squad, which are clearly aimed at elementary school kids, young kids. I mean, you know, 6 and 7 year olds these are aimed at, because that's what the cartoon is for. And so we just basically write different comics for different age levels, all using the same heroes, the same characters, just in different storylines that are age appropriate. Marvel in the 80s apparently didn't want to muck with their continuity. They were still big on this whole single universe thing. And so to bring little kids into the comics, it wasn't, you couldn't just write Spider-Man for a younger audience. No, you needed heroes that you could write at that level. It would have been some kind of sacrilege, I suppose, to write a Hulk who was, you know, geared at 3 year olds. So they created Power Pack, and it was just stupid because, you know what? Nobody wants to grow up to be Power Pack. No kids are reading that going, oh, I so wish I could fly with rainbows coming out of my butt. No, little kids look at the comics and they say, I want to be Spider-Man. That's what they do. And they should have stuck with that. But my brother and I collected comics through the 80s, and we bought most number one issues. So whenever a new series came out, new miniseries, new regular series, we would probably pick up the number one of it to see how it went. And when we got Power Pack, we thought, oh, hey, maybe they're onto something. And so we went ahead with the first few issues because we thought, hey, what if this goes somewhere? This could be valuable. And it turns out, no, we were just idiots. The story wasn't good. We didn't enjoy reading it. The whole thing was lame and stupid. We never should have bought it. So I regret. No, I don't regret, because if I hadn't have bought it then, I wouldn't have this story to tell you now. And then the podcast would just be blank air, and nobody wants that. Number 12, Jeff Hawes writes, your favorite SNL bit, Saturday Night Live. And then in parentheses he adds, something that repeated, Samurai Deli, Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, etc. Yeah, you know what? I thought I was going to have to think about this, but I don't. What was the name of it? It doesn't matter what the name of it was. It was the two public radio gals who are doing a cooking / food show on public radio, and their guest was perpetually Alec Baldwin as Pete Schwede, and he would come on at Christmas time and try and sell his Schwede balls. And then later he advertised that you could get a Schwede nutsack, and then his Schwede wieners, and this came back over and over, and every time, laugh my ass off. I love that bit. Alec Baldwin, again, comic genius. Man, maybe a butt in real life, but man, he is good at comedy. He hits that mark every time. And the Schwede balls, the Schwede ball sack, the whole thing, funny. I don't care how juvenile that is. It makes me laugh every time. And I don't know which writer it was that was really pushing that kind of humor, because they did those jokes a lot. All right, when they had Christopher Walken, again, genius, that's why he's in the triumvirate, when they had Christopher Walken come around as Colonel Angus, funny, absolutely funny. When they had the two guys at the winery who were soaking cork, funny. And it, again, it's all the exact same joke. Every single one of these skits is the exact same joke, and I don't care, because I laugh every time. They will beat that dead horse until it comes back to life and makes you laugh. It is funny. So that's my favorite. There's lots of other Saturday Night Live skits that I love. I've seen tons of Saturday Night Live. Really, really like all of it. But that's the best stuff, is Pete Schwede, Alec Baldwin. Number 43. This one is from someone calling themselves KJ, just initials. And KJ says, I've recently found myself attracted to a person who works at a correctional facility. The problem is that we're both married with kids, and he works in a whole different state. I'm in Texas, and he's in a northern state. We've had to keep our relationship on the down low to protect our respective privacies and our other lives. So I've had to resort to finding ways to communicate with him through other means. Means that won't tip off his wife or mine of our mutual love. So could you send out a long-distance dedication to PJ from KJ and play Chicago's You're the Inspiration? Thanks. Well, you know what, KJ? I can do that for you. So here, to PJ from KJ, You're the Inspiration. To self, don't forget to go back and buy Chicago's Inspiration and insert it right there. I left a big blank silence. You can't miss it. Number 22. This one's from a Serious Paul. I'm amazed that it's taken this long. Is this our first Serious Paul of the show? No, Serious Paul opened us up too. Serious Paul, by the way, has gone nuts with the Podomatic entries. We are now up to, I think, 280-something, almost 300 Podomatic entries, which, by the way, thank you, everybody. I love having this kind of variety here. I love knowing that something wild can come out of the woodwork at any moment. Because when the list is short, by the way, I know what most of them are, because I look over the list a little bit just to make sure that, oh, look, I already addressed that one, make sure I throw that one out, or, oh, look, these questions were similar. And so I get kind of familiar with them, so I kind of have an idea that this might come up later or it might not. But when the list is 300 long, I haven't a clue. When these things pop up during the show, it could be anything. So I really appreciate that. And Paul went more nuts than anyone else, and he owns almost half of the Podomatic entries now. So I'm amazed that, you know what, we're probably going to have to do a Serious Paul-O-Matic pretty soon. But for today, we'll stick with this one. Number 22, Serious Paul says, okay, choose one, Picard or Kirk. Well, that's easy. Samuel LaForge. God, I don't know what's wrong with you. I mean, all right, look, if I have to choose between Picard and Kirk, I love them both, but clearly Picard is the superior captain. Absolutely the superior captain. Hands down, no question. The man is just smooth. He's Jean-Luc Picard, for God's sake. He's Patrick Stewart. I mean, even that carries some darn weight. The man is awesome. But if I have to pick my favorite captain of the USS Enterprise of all time, Samuel LaForge beats them all. He's crotchety, he's mean, he drives his crew relentlessly, and yet, I don't care, I love him. The man is spectacular. So, that's my answer. Number 11. This one comes from someone calling himself Brasky. Brasky writes, Kitty Pryde versus Dazzler in a pillow fight. Powers are off-limit, but tearing of clothes is encouraged. How does this play out? Let me tell you how this plays out. This is going to be a very long competition. The pillows will probably burst early, and it will come down to just some straight-up wrestling. It will be very sweaty, very long. The the tearing of clothes will most certainly be happening, and ultimately, the winner will be me. Number 27. You know what? We haven't done nearly as many Podomatics as we usually do, but man, we're over time. So let's make this our last one. It comes from Talvin, and Talvin says, if you were a Firefly character, which one would you be? That's easy. I would like to think that I'd be Captain Mal, because don't we all want to be Captain Mal? Wouldn't that be awesome? Because he's spectacular. He rocks, and we all wish we could be that cool. But no, I'm very realistic, and I understand that I would be Wash. I would be Alan Tudyk, and I have no problems with that because that man is great. It's Wash. He is a huge nerd. He would be listening to our podcast if the podcast survived 500 years into the Firefly universe. He's one of us. And he also is a happily married man who is incredibly loyal to his wife. He's incredibly loyal to his friends. He is just a good dude. And he's very funny, and he's played by Alan Tudyk. If I was going to be in a movie, I would want to be played by Alan Tudyk, except maybe a little younger. I think he's a little older than me, and, you know, I'm a lot more dashing, probably. But other than that, no, definitely Wash. This podcast is copyright 2012 by Nerd Pride Radio. The featured music this week was Skindred with Nobody and Pressure. The opening and closing theme is from the Beastie Boys' Sabotage, as performed by the Penelopes. The bumper clips are taken from Everything Right is Wrong Again by They Might Be Giants, Weezer's In the Garage, and Richard O'Brien with Science Fiction Double Feature. All bumper music is available on iTunes. Please check those songs out. Please buy them. I wouldn't put them in my show if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes, write us a nice review. And if you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, but don't really bother with that. You can check out our Facebook page. That's a little better, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the best way to get hold of me is come over to our forum at nerdprideradio.com/forum, sign up for an account, post there, talk to me, send me a message, we'll hang out, we will have fun. Little Red Lester. Oh, never mind. How are you on Tilsit? Tish, tish, no matter. Well, stout yeoman, 4 ounces of Caerphilly, if you please. Ah, Belpaisy? Red Windsor? Stilton? Emmental, Gruyar? Any Norwegian Jarlsberg, perchance? Lipta? Lancashire? White Stilton? Danish Brew? Double Gloucester? Cheshire, Dorset Blue Vinny, Brie, Roquefort, Paul de Vec, Port Salut, Savoyard, Saint Pauline, Cahiers de l'Est, Red Blue, Brusson, Camembert, perhaps. Yes, fetch hither the Fromage de la Belle France. Gouda, Edam, Caithness, Smoked Austrian, Japanese Sage Derby, Wensleydale, Greek feta, Gorgonzola, Parmesan, Mozzarella, Paper Crema, Danish Bimbo, Czech Sheep's Milk, Venezuelan Beaver Cheese. Oh, ah, how about cheddar? Oh, Ilchester, eh? All right. Have you got any? He asked, expecting the answer no. Okay. Have you got any Limburger? What a senseless waste of human life.